It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
Not if a giant sinkhole opens beneath us and kills us all instantly. How you doing, Will?
So, it's my grandmother's 80th birthday.
Happy birthday, Grandma Link.
No, Galata.
Galata?
Mother's side.
Oh, way to trade up.
And I am going to New York this weekend, and I'm taking a red eye tomorrow night. I've never taken a red eye.
You've never taken a red eye?
I've never needed to.
That's a nightmare. Enjoy.
I know. This is going to be a nightmare, coupled with the fact that because I'm going to New York, there's a storm, a snowstorm in New York, and now I don't know whether my flight's going to happen. So when you listen to this, I'm either going to be in New York, or I'm not going to be in New York. But I guess the same could be said of you.
Or you're just going to be in Terminal 2 in Burbank Airport wasting away.
I'm going to be Tom Hanks. I'm going to have a weekend like Tom Hanks in the terminal, except it'll be the Burbank Airport.
Yeah, and that's it. It's just going to be Starbucks and what do they have there? Chili's to go, or they don't even have one of those?
They have like a cheeseburger place, and that's about it.
Yeah, just be sitting at the bar drinking $9 shots.
Yeah, this will be great. This will be a great adventure.
Well, good luck with that.
Well, I'm sure I'll have a story next week on the podcast.
Or it'll go flawlessly and nothing will happen, and you'll come back. And how was your trip? Good.
Yeah,
no
probably.
Incidents.
And honestly, that's more likely to happen. But now I'm jinxing it. But this episode doesn't come up till Saturday, so I'm not jinxing it to the world, just to you. What's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
The same.
Same?
Same. You guys know the drill.
Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter.
Tell your friends.
We've had no big news to report in this section lately.
For months.
But we have, you know, I mean,
it's the road to 204.
We road to 204 likes. That's what we're going for. So make it happen, people. Who's the sponsor this week?
Well, Will, this week's episode is brought to you by Venezuela. Now available. Who wants it?
I think you're in the running, right?
I am, yes. I think we're all in the running. Actually, Pope Benedict XVI, strangely enough, is planning to run for president of Venezuela.
This is most disappointing for me because I know next week Hugo Chavez was supposed to be our guest.
It's really, you know, bad timing, and his TED Talk got canceled.
This is it's very upsetting.
Yeah, Sean Penn has not stopped crying. And Oliver Stone.
On the show this week, it's pilot season, which means a lot here in Los Angeles, and we're going to go through some of the wackier pilots or more interesting pilots that may or may not make it to air. And we have an enemy that, well, there's a million of them. There's a million of them, and I've got a lot of things to say and a lot more things to say from when I even came up with this enemy. But first, our guest this week, he's a comedian, storyteller, cartoonist, right? He does it all, which is why we're excited to have him, Michael Patrick Duggan.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the show.
How's it going?
It's good. It's good.
I know you just came here from rehearsal. You do so many things.
Yeah.
You're involved in so many things. How do you do it?
I don't.
All lies.
It's a lot going on right now. So, and I'm not really sure if I'm doing it well or not. We're about to find out, though.
You just got to push forward. That's like us in the podcast. We're never sure if we're doing it well, but we just push forward.
We never look back. Just
you're doing it well. You are doing it well.
Well, I met you at a storytelling show that you run.
And the Blodger Show.
The Blodger Show.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on. I had a great time at the show, and you were telling me a lot of interesting things you're involved in. But before we get to some of those, we want to get into a little bit of your origin story. You're not from Los Angeles, right?
No, I'm from New Mexico. So, the land of enchantment.
The land, yes.
Actually.
As it says on their license plates.
It does, on every one of them. It also says USA on the New Mexico license plates.
Interesting, just in case they forget.
Yeah.
In case they get it confused with the other Mexico.
Just in case you leave the state.
Yes. They're too hopped up on crystal meth.
Right. So, it didn't used to be that way, by the way. It's funny. New Mexico used to be all natural.
And, yeah.
Everyone would be offended. You know, Father Diamond when I was growing up, would have been offended by the meth.
Who's Father Diamond?
He was our parish priest.
Oh, so. Okay. I thought this was some sort of Anasazi spirit that haunts, yeah. You know.
Father Diamond.
Yeah. Some ancient Native American ghost that all children in New Mexico learn about.
Yeah.
Well, how long have you been here in Los Angeles,
14 years.
Oh, so that's the long haul.
That is the long haul. It has been a long haul.
And what was the original thing that brought you here, then?
Well, I was living in New York at the time. Because I'm from New Mexico, so I left and I went to New York. And then I was there for like 5 years, and I tried to get into television, storyboarding, cartoon type stuff. And in New York, I was doing that pretty successfully, but there's only limited opportunity for it there, at least there was at the time. So I moved out to LA and quickly discovered that actually storyboarding cartoons is work.
And as opposed to what it was in New York?
In New York, it was fun.
Okay, so now it was like it was more of a grind.
Yeah, in L.A., you would do it at home in New York, and you would do it on your drawing table, and you would bring it in, and then you and the editor would sit around and smoke in a cubicle. This is in the 90s.
And, so it's not quite the Mad Men.
You would drink large sodas and smoke cigarettes indoors, the good old days.
We'd have Fresca and cigarettes, and then we would, you know, enjoy ourselves and redraw a little bit. But in L.A., I got out here, and it was like an assembly line. It was like you were in a factory of cubicles,
oh, wow.
And you went to work, and you stayed in there, and you got your allotted amount of pages done, and it was just hell, and I was not really cut out for that, you know?
So what were you cut out for?
Not that.
At the time.
I was cut out for, like, drawing some pictures that then other people draw lots of pictures of those things identically. I was cut out for doing it once, imperfectly.
Got it.
And then somebody else would do it better and more times. But I was hoping what would happen is I would get a lot of money for that first one. And that's kind of how I did my comic books. You know, if you look at my comic books, all my characters are morphed. Like, you can't even tell. I mean, I literally had a clown book that I was known for, Fudang the Clown. And I basically put, like, a clown nose and a giant green wig on him. Mm-hmm. So everybody would know that was the main character, you know? And that was how I drew.
So besides drawing, if you're making comic books, you always had a love of, I guess, like writing and telling stories and stuff.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So then how did you turn that into, I'm going to be involved with, like, these storytelling shows? I'm going to put on shows where people come up and tell their stories.
Right.
Like, where did it change from... Like, where did that interest come from?
Actually, I'm sorry. I'm going to jump in here for a second. I see that you also drew for Disney Adventures.
Yes.
How long... Was that at the beginning of the run, or was that...
I drew for them for about a year.
Okay, but so, do you know when that was?
It would have been in 1996.
Okay, I only ask because I used to collect Disney Adventures magazine, and I still have the entire first series of all the Disney Adventures, and it's kind of sad because... A couple of the people on those covers are dead, like John Candy. Do you know what this is? It was like a kids' magazine for Disney.
No,
I'll show you after the recording, but I saw that you did Disney Adventures. I used to love those magazines. So just totally random. Yeah. I'll show you some early Disney Adventures after this.
That's fantastic.
But you got into storytelling and comic.
I was drawing a comic book, and I was in L.A., and I was just sort of, like, doing my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, just stuck at home all the time. And my birthday came around, and a couple of friends put some money together, and they bought me a workshop to get the hell out of the house. And it was a storytelling workshop.
Interesting.
With Beth Lapidus, and she's like a big deal storyteller and a pioneer in that. And I loved it, and it really worked for me, and so I just started doing it after that.
Now, were these specifically comedic stories or any kind of rhetorical...
Well, in my case, they're usually comedic, but she was teaching just how to tell a story.
Okay.
So,
I've been going to a lot of these things because it's something I'm trying to get involved with myself, and I personally... I mean, not obviously, you get up there and tell a good story is a good story, but I always feel the same thing from the personal angle. I need it to be a little funny. I need to, you know, kind of grab people. I know I couldn't be necessarily maybe a stand-up comic, but I think I can make people laugh with a story. So I don't know.
I think that's a lack of confidence in your part. You could make people laugh. very easily. You made me laugh when I met you, so.
Well, that's true.
So you can't, you're not going to get up there and be like, I first discovered the lump when I was 18 years old.
But I mean, I guess
45 minutes of torturous cancer treatment, you know?
I guess there's a place for stories like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, survivor groups.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? We've got a couple of them on the next Town Tales. We're going to have a couple people who...
Well, let me ask you about that. Let's get to that then first, because you started this new weekly show...
Tattletales.
Okay. At Shetty's Public Parlor.
Correct.
Which sounds made up.
I know it does.
It's at Shetty's, yeah, Shetty's.
Well, this is a brand new show you started, so tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Tattletales is something I'm doing with a comedian named Christian Sherm. And Christian is a high-energy, high-impact young lady who, you know, she's all to the wall with everything. And so, but she's had a terribly tragic childhood and, you know, like most comedians, yeah, is eating herself up inside. So she wants to tell the stories of her life. And you can't do that at the Comedy Store, so where she has her own show. So she wanted to find something. And what I was doing is for the foundation, for LA Storyworks, which I guess we'll get to it.
Yeah, yeah. I want to get into that.
I have sort of a mandate from my board to come up with like several different little options, one of which is like a weekly storytelling show and then a monthly storytelling show. And they'll be all different kinds. And so I thought about this and I thought, well, I can't do these alone. So I reached out to Christian and said, well, you're obviously in pain.
You're a sad human.
You need to let this out.
Come here. You know. Yeah. And so she and I set up the weekly show, and every week it features some new god-awful thing that's happened to her from her childhood that she makes sound sort of funny or sometimes very funny. And then we also have like three or four other storytellers telling some true life scenario, something that happened to them usually. So,
and it sounds like a great show. I know this coming Thursday, there's going to be a very terrific...
very special episode.
Very special...
Yeah, another god-awful tragedy up on stage.
A wonderful podcaster is going
Mark
to
Maron?
Be... Yes, yes, Mark Maron and myself will be performing at this. I'm very excited. It should be a lot of fun.
It should be.
And I love that you're just putting on these weekly show. I mean, right. That's...
Make sure you put Will up after the woman going up with the double mastectomy story and everyone's just weeping, you know, after Tig Notaro gets up there without the jokes.
Right.
And then get Will up there to kind of, you know, soften them up again.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Now, how do you find people to come tell these stories? Is it, I mean, you know, Link and this girl, Christian, excluded... Is it a lot of the same people week to week, or do you have to
search? Well, right now we're doing different people as we go, and so I've just been spending like, I don't know, maybe the last year or so, I really got invested in like going to storytelling shows around the city.
Okay.
And so, and plus I know a lot of storytellers because that's what I started doing before I started doing comedy per se. I was doing storytelling, so I was in a lot of workshops for a while, and I met a lot of people who knew people who knew people. So it's sort of a combination of all of the above. So I mostly it's people I've seen and then I liked something they do
and then say, hey, come on aboard, right. And
exactly.
Come here. And that's great. And that's how you keep spreading the word and get it bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
That's how we get guests for the podcast.
Pretty much. I mean, it's pretty much as we have someone interesting on who introduces us to more interesting people, and hopefully, and then we have you, and then we have other people, and it all works out. Now, tell us
like
about...
Like a virus, one person to the next.
Exactly. Tell us about the LA Storyworks. You mentioned it. It's a nonprofit organization. Tell us about this.
LA Storyworks is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to teaching storytelling to people. Essentially, like we're going to put on shows that feature storytelling because we believe strongly that something happens to a person's brain when they hear a story that's not completely just being played in front of them like on television, but is somebody's description of something where somebody explains something. And when it's about the person who's doing the talking, it also helps because there's a chemistry thing that happens in the mind. People think about it. They want to tell their own story after that too. And then also we have workshops where we've begun teaching kids how to tell stories and also combine stories with like a daily activity that's a basic survival thing. And the idea is to bring the two together and sort of fire the synapses.
And get people want. Yeah, I like what you say. Let you someone hear someone tell a story, and then they want to tell their story in a kind of. And it's important to be able to express yourself in that way.
Exactly.
And I'm glad that you're going to be teaching children to tell stories, because if you ever heard an 8-year-old try to tell a story, it's god awful.
Yeah.
And then okay, and you get to the point, kid. You know, I need a beginning, a middle, and an end. Give me an intro, a conclusion, and five, you know, salient points.
If you could fix in a moral somewhere, that'd be great.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I didn't catch your hook, and it wasn't funny enough.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah. What? How do you go about? Like, I mean, when you say storytelling, I mean, are you teaching just how to verbally tell a story, or does this even teach them how they'd be able to write one? Like, I mean, like what is something you do in the teaching? Because, I mean, the idea of teaching someone to tell a story, like, I know how to, like, critique someone's writing, and I know how to tell a story myself, but I don't know if I know how to tell somebody how to tell a story.
And some people are just bad storytellers. They get lost in details of it, you know.
Uh-huh. Oh, I do too, all the time.
Yep.
So, what are some tips that you like might give people?
All right, so like one of our workshops we did was the Soup and Stories workshop, which is we got these kids, at-risk youth, and we sat down with them. We showed them how to make soup. While we were teaching them how to make the soup, we were also talking to them about, like, you know, think about what your day was like today, and when did it begin, and where have you been with it, and what do you think about it? And so what happens is they think about that for a minute, and then we show them how to make the soup. And it sounds bizarre, but once they take their mind off of their day for a moment and focus on this task of building something, something happens in their head where they actually start at the beginning and they tell it.
I got an idea for you. Forget soup. Wallets or handbags. Just have those kids stitching and sewing and making cheap knockoffs. Yeah. They could be doing that while telling stories. And they, then you could turn around and sell them. Just clean up with the profit.
Their hands are too big.
Oh.
Big-handed kids. But no, but that's great. That's actually really great. And it's a great way with the... Because, I mean, like, reading here, you're doing it all over from Skid Row and everything. I mean...
To Rose Skid, which is the hippest neighborhood now in Los Angeles.
How? I mean, is this something people can get involved with? Like, if people want to help?
Yeah, historically, LA Storyworks has... It's a 14-year-old organization, so... It's
been here in L.A. as long as you, though.
It has actually been here. They formed it, actually, as I learned, the same month I moved here.
Huh.
Which I think...
A little weird.
It was meant to be. But, over the years, it's been very popular. And then other times, it's been not very popular at all. And it just depended on the will of the board driving it beforehand. Because sometimes, like, they had a few years where they were like, hey, we're going to have a festival. We got to do it next month. okay, let's do it, you know. And then other times they worked on it for 6 months in advance and they were all ready, you know, and it was a big deal. So
now, speaking of festivals.
Yeah, the L.A. Storytelling
Festival. The L.A. Storytelling Festival.
Right.
Is the other thing I wanted to ask you about.
That's the big annual event that L.A. Storyworks puts on. And this year we're going to do it a little bit differently than we have in years past, because in the past what they did was they kind of had like they would – import like the old cowboy from Montana to talk about the plains, you know, and then they'd have like this this lady from the Catskills, and she'd show up and she'd tell you like how last time she made some, I don't know, latkes or something, you know, and then they would have to do this, and it was all very like
anthropological, just having different forms and different kinds of storytelling,
right,
from different traditions and different backgrounds,
all kinds of stuff. And the thing is that you can do that in Los Angeles, but they have an international storytelling festival that does it on a grand scale, and that happens every year also. So when we decided to take over the board, which we're the new board of the festival,
it's a bloody coup.
In a bloody coup, that left our opponents.
We took
dead.
Over the board of the storytelling nonprofit. Blood everywhere, heads and bodies.
That's right, and we basically decided that what we were going to do was. It's the Los Angeles Storytelling Festival, so we're going to try and focus this year on Los Angeles and make everything kind of about it. So
interesting.
There's a bunch of shows in L.A. right now. There's tons of great storytelling shows here now.
I mean, that's the thing that constantly, and it wasn't until we started having guests on here like Alex Alexander and now yourself, I tell people, like, oh, who our guest is going to be, and they don't realize how many of these shows there are, and going to them... I didn't realize there's like almost one a night somewhere that you could go to.
It's crazy. And you could go every night. You could.
And they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, they are. They're great. And
they can be inconsistent, though. You got to, sometimes you can, you get a couple of bad ones.
That's anything you go to. You go see bands perform, you go see a comic, stand-up comics. No, everything else is gold.
Yeah, everything's perfect.
Well, yeah. Our plan is just to go ahead and
so these are stories
assemble
that,
those
so
shows.
When is this festival going to happen?
Well, we're thinking about September right now.
Okay.
We're kind of in talks with a couple of different venues. We've talked to LACMA, we've talked to the Improv, we've talked to the Coronet, we've talked to the Downtown Independent Theater. There's a giant park downtown that
Grand
built.
Park. It's beautiful. And so talk to LA Opera as well.
So yeah, we might try them then. And if you know anybody there,
I may know some people there.
So that we've just been sort of in discussions, and the problem is like the festival was on hiatus last year because the old board was they were done, and they were just like
the coup hadn't happened yet.
They were like, please have a coup, you know, and so they were exhausted. And they just didn't want to do it anymore, and it was too hard. So we came up with our plan, and then we introduced it, and then they just transferred to us, and now it's on our back. But it kind of means we're starting from scratch. So if anybody out there has a venue that's giant, you know,
and needs to be an indoor venue with space for like corners where you can almost have breakout sessions, people can come around,
we can do
hear
something
a story.
With it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we may do it as like a as if it was like a Renaissance fair, but we may also just do like a series of shows like Fringe would do. So where we just have like we could do like Top Tail at the festival.
Okay.
You know, Taboo Tales at the festival.
Oh, interesting. So you just bring
nights.
All these other shows to one place and they do their thing.
I'm all about getting people who've done it already to just do it again, but stick my name on it. You know?
There you
hey, go. That's the way to do it.
I'm thinking that's the way to go. So,
well, look, this sounds like it's going to be great. I mean, it does. And I really like this LA Storyworks. I mean, it sounds like a fantastic group.
Yeah, if you want to come teach some kids how to talk, you guys can.
You don't want me in front of children.
But we know how to talk. I mean, that's.
Well, that's, I mean, I mean, you can think of podcasting in a way as a form of storytelling, and there's you know, interview format more like what we do, but there are plenty of podcasts that are very story driven or very long form, and maybe that would be another thing to look at for the festival.
Absolutely.
Just putting it out there.
Yeah.
Now, is there a website for this that people could go to? Is there a place where they can get information?
Absolutely. You can go to lastoryworks.org.
Okay.
There's all sorts of information on local events that are happening all over the city with various shows. We have a calendar that is full of events across the city all the time.
Oh, great.
So, like, different shows will come and they just put their dates on there. And that's good. We have lists of teachers who are storytelling teachers as well. It's a resource you could just go look into if you're interested in learning storytelling and paying money for it. You could just go there. There's a whole index of them. There's an index of workshops that are going on around the city, that sort of thing. And then you can also just get information on the festival there. Or you can also make a tax-deductible donation to LA Storyworks through the website. So.
And if you're a good listener of the podcast, you have already been to this website because it is up on our Facebook page. And if you're a great listener of the podcast, you've made a donation.
And if you're an amazing listener, you've taken out an irrevocable life insurance policy and named the foundation as the beneficiary.
Yeah. When did you put it up on your thing?
Between the second and when this episode posts, it will be up on the website.
Before anyone hears this,
oh, okay.
But not quite yet.
Because we did get a donation yesterday, I saw it.
We'll take credit for it.
Yeah,
we'll
that was us, yeah. So I believe that was Andrea Marchant, actually.
Yes, Andrea Marchant donated a ton of money to your group.
Fantastic.
And Tattle Tales, like you said, it's every Thursday night, 8 p.m., Shetty's Public Parlor.
Correct.
Which is right on Fairfax, right?
Fairfax, just below 3rd Street. It's right next to the Writers Guild. And,
okay.
So it's right in that little area. And Shetty's is a fantastic little wine bar. Jim Shetty is a very knowledgeable source of all things wine. And it's his bar. And
well, I can't wait to be down there this Thursday having a glass of wine and meeting
and
Jim
whining.
Shetty and whining about my my probably trivial issue compared to what some of these
compared
might
to the double mastectomy story you'll be following up.
Yeah, exactly. You just wait till you hear it. That's you're gonna feel
like an
jerk.
Well, let's move on to the topics, and let me tell you what. I have never seen a television network in more dire straits than NBC.
Dire straits is it on NBC?
It should be. So
they have fallen to fifth among 18 to 49-year-olds. They're below Univision.
Right, because I was about to say, I believe they're the big four. And for those of you who don't know, NBC is the National Broadcast Corporation.
Yes, national. And a Cleveland affiliate, this amazed me, a Cleveland affiliate decided to air an old Matlock movie instead of The Office and 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, their new show that nobody's watching, I guess. Huh. They decided to air an old Matlock, and apparently the people of Cleveland loved it. The affiliate says they're going to do it again.
Yeah, a 19-year-old Matlock movie. Yeah.
How did it come to this? How did they fuck themselves like this? What happened? Because when I was younger, NBC was the network.
They ruled.
Yeah. They had Cheers and Cosby and then Seinfeld and Friends.
I think it was just Death by a Thousand Cuts. I think it was just a series of shows that, you know, The Office was very not popular. It was very highly regarded, but low rating, very niche. And then you had, you know, Parks and Recreation and 30 Rock. So that's their comedy block. That's what replaced their juggernaut, you know, Seinfeld Friends. And I just think just one bad show after another. When was the last time there was really a show on NBC that you felt like, I need to sit down and watch?
Besides
Smash. I know you're a big Smash fan.
Smash fan. Well, let me ask you this. Michael, do you watch any NBC shows? Like, you got any shows programmed on your DVR?
I don't know.
How about Parks and Rec? Do you watch Parks and Rec?
No, I don't watch that. It's not. I don't have anything against it.
Okay,
I just don't.
And you can have something against it.
I have a problem with having to sit down when it comes on, and I only just found out I have a DVR, so this actually is.
I don't have a television, as you can see. So,
yeah, I did find out that I have a DVR now, so that's great. But I just found out, so maybe I'll watch something now, but.
NBC would say you're part of the problem.
And you're also a Nielsen household, you just found out.
I just found out. I do watch, there's a show called Grimm.
That's NBC, yeah.
I've been watching that on my
How
cable.
How is that?
It sucked at first, but it's getting better. So.
Okay.
Sometimes a lot of these high-concept shows, like, if you like the concept, stick with them because they have to find themselves a little bit. I guess it was something
it
like
that.
It
could be that.
And you then know, there's Do also, No Harm.
Yeah. There's also the whole thing with, like, and I might not be the right person to be watching it anyway because I drew comic books and wrote comic books for years. So when you have a show that's about werewolves, basically, like, I'm going to be watching that with a keen and discerning eye. And I'm going to have some thoughts on it. You know?
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, yeah, he turned into a werewolf and then they ran around. You know? Like,
hey, I'd watch that. Dude runs around. Sounds great. Yeah. Did you watch Heroes when that was on?
No. You know what? Again, I just didn't know when it was on and I was always missing it. So.
Okay. But now with the DVR.
Now I might be able to get it. You know?
Well, it's off been off the air for a couple of years. And
it
had one good season and then it went right into the toilet.
Right.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, you know, this got me thinking. There are a lot of pilots out there. And I compiled a list, and I basically wanted to run through them with you guys, and we'll decide whether we're going to give these. These aren't all NBC shows, but whether we want to give some of these a shot. So it
gives you a sense of where network television is these days.
Now, a lot of these shows, there are a lot of new shows based off of movies, including, you know you've always wanted it, Beverly Hills Cop. The TV show in which Brandon T. Jackson is going to play Axel Foley's son and Eddie Murphy will be making guest star appearances. So, Beverly Hills Cop, the TV show, in or out?
I think out.
Is Brandon T. Jackson one of the Jackson siblings?
He was the guy from Tropic Thunder. He was the rapper who they put in the movie.
Right.
Booty Sweat.
Well, that was Robert Downey Jr. in blackface.
Oh, that was... Huh? Exactly.
Yeah.
It was Robert Downey Jr. is going to be Axel Foley's son. Is what we're, but, I mean, yeah, right? I mean, it's just going to be... What? I don't even understand. Is this going to be like a funny...
Is this on NBC?
No, I think this is CBS.
Oh.
It could be fun, you know, because it's got the weekly police procedural element, and you have that fish out of water.
But is it going to be an hour or a half hour? Is it a sitcom?
CBS knows how to do these procedurals, and they'll make this work.
And it's branded already. They already it's a property that they can capitalize on its name.
And then you got that theme music. Bum, 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 bum,
which
bum,
is actually
bum,
pretty great theme
yeah.
music.
So there you go. It's done.
This is done.
Big
hit.
25 million viewers a week.
This is in.
Okay. Also from a movie, because this is, like you said, branded material, Bad Teacher. They're making a movie version of the Cameron Diaz, Justin Timberlake film, Bad Teacher. It's going to star Ari Grainer, who I like as an actress.
Was she on...
She was in...
Entourage?
No. She was...
Well, that was Ari...
Ari Gold. Yeah. Or whatever. Was it Gold? I don't know. That sounds like it was right. She was in the movie Nick and Nora's Infinite
Play. Oh, okay.
Play.
Was
she's
she
the
Nora?
Blonde girl throwing up in the
was she the one
bathroom?
That they just abandoned in yes. In the bus stop to get raped?
She plays a lot of best friends, and I think she's actually really good at it. And now she's... I don't know. I like her. I also think she's cute, which probably helps. Would you watch a show based off the movie Bad Teacher?
No.
It's got to be better than the movie, though, right?
I didn't see the movie, but I assume that by the end of Bad Teacher, she becomes a good teacher.
You know what? I saw the movie, and from what I remember, she does not. I think she's still kind of a jerk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But she manages to save the auditorium or the music program or something.
So week after week, we're just going to see this incompetent teacher do her thing? Is that what the
deal
is?
I guess so.
Neat.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I will watch it then.
We're winning you over.
You're just going to fill your DVR up with crap.
Yeah.
I'm not watching a Bad Teacher TV show.
More branded material. About a Boy, the TV show. Now, this is a movie I love, so...
Nicholas Hoff was the boy from About a Boy.
Yeah, who's now slaying giants.
And being a zombie with a heart.
Yeah, he's America's favorite lovable zombie. I don't know anything more about this other than the fact that it's a TV show based off About a Boy, which is a wonderful movie. Did you like the movie?
I love that movie, yeah.
Would you give a show?
The TV show's going to be nothing like it.
It will be nothing like it, but I probably will watch it just in the hope that it will have some glimmer of that movie in it.
In fact, the TV show is going to be actually about a girl, but they're using the name About a Boy.
Really?
For random. No, but that would be amazing.
Although the boy is... I can't believe I felt that. It'll be a werewolf boy who will run around.
Uh-huh.
So you watch that?
I would watch that with keen interest.
I don't know. Also... A remake of Ironside.
I don't even know what this is.
Raymond Burr back in the day. Yeah. Do you remember the show?
Yeah, yeah.
He was a lawyer, like, in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it, right?
That's the whole... he was pretty much up for an Emmy every time he rolled into the room. That's how that went, you know.
So, you know.
Is that why he's called Ironside?
Yes.
I thought that was, like, his Vietnam code name or something.
Well, maybe that's how he lost his ability to walk.
Ah.
So that's happening, too. I don't think I'll be watching that.
You won't be watching Ironside. I don't think bring back Team Knight Rider. I could go for that again.
Yeah.
And one more branded material thing. And this one I might actually give a shot, even though it's CBS and I don't watch anything currently on CBS. Under the Dome, which is based off the Stephen King book, which I guess is based off the plot to the Simpsons movie, about a town that's stuck under a giant dome.
Oh, wow. Huh.
I think I'm going to give it a shot just because I like Stephen King.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's always that whole thing of now they're cut off from the rest of the world, and my God, what will happen in that town if they can't get out?
It could have kind of a Walking Dead vibe to it where people are just... Yeah. Losing their mind, and you know, basically in the book, you get the shopkeeper who becomes the strong man who seizes control of the town, and a lot of good conflict in this.
Dean Norris of Breaking Bad has been cast in it too. That's... in a role, and he's really great on Breaking Bad. Do you watch Breaking Bad?
No.
You watch nothing.
I have seen it. It takes place in Albuquerque, right?
I know. Yeah. It should be all about it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good show with Professor Diamond, or what's his name?
Right, Professor Diamond.
Reverend Diamond.
Father Diamond.
Father Diamond, which is also code name for crystal meth.
Crystal meth, Father Diamond.
Father Diamond.
I never thought of that.
Okay, now we're going to get into some of the weirder ones.
Oh, those weren't the weird. Ironside remake wasn't a weird one?
Intelligence. Josh Holloway stars from Lost, Josh Holloway, as a cybercrime agent who can access the entire electromagnetic spectrum with his mind. I don't even know what that means.
Right. It's a lot like telepathy.
Is that what that means?
It's like electromagnetic telepathy he has.
So does that mean like he could read like computers?
Yeah, he's going to be able to see radio waves around himself, and everything is going to be very surreal looking and
sounds
stuff
like it'll be very easy to solve crimes.
Yeah, I would think.
Especially if you're investigating cyber crime.
Each episode's going to be on Adult Swim. Each episode's going to be 8 minutes long. Yeah. He's like, got it. It's him. No, it's him. I got it. We're good.
It's over there.
It's over there. They blindfold him. He just points.
Do you want to see Josh Holloway access the entire electromagnetic spectrum with his mind?
I do want to see it once. You know, at least. I'll check it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I like a little sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's like this show Unforgettable with the woman with the photographic memory.
But she just can't forget. She can do anything but forget.
God, she would be annoying, wouldn't she?
Yeah. Everything you've ever done, she goes right back in your face.
Women, am I right?
J.J. Abrams, speaking of sci-fi, J.J. Abrams, the great J.J. Abrams, he has a show coming out. It's untitled right now. It's a futuristic LAPD cop show where the cops are partnered with androids.
Right.
Okay.
Well, there was a show called Future Cop that came out in the 1970s.
Yes.
Round about, 75, I think?
What's his name in this?
Was
there a famous person in Future Cop?
Yeah, there was, but I can't remember who he is either.
Well, what was the plot of Future Cop?
Future Cop was, he was a regular police officer who died, and then his mind was somehow transferred or something into the body of a robot cop.
Robo-cop?
But he looked just like a normal guy. He was an android cop, but he was terrified of car crushers. Because he was made out of car parts. And so he had car parts in him. And I still remember to this day watching it. And then they're chasing the bad guys along. And they go through a junkyard.
Always a junkyard.
And then the bad guy, because it's the 70s and they were just junkyards everywhere. And then this guy jumps up and he gets up. And then the future cop comes running around. He's got his gun in his hand. And he's about to chase him. But then there's a car crusher there. And he freezes. And he can't do anything. And then the bad guy's like a snake coming back, like, what's wrong with you? I'm going to kill you. And the future cop can't do anything. He's stuck there. And then his human partner runs up and punches out the bad guy. Thank God.
Thank God.
I love that he's paralyzed by seeing a car crusher.
The only thing that scares future cop is car crushers and communists.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you what. I am not interested in J.J. Abrams' show, but I am very interested in finding episodes of future cop.
I think I've seen the trailer for this on YouTube. And
you know what? I think you're thinking of the Ernest Borgnine thing, which is not future cop, but is some other failed android cop show.
Really?
Yeah.
Or just an SNL sketch that we're confusing with all of this.
Or I've just now gotten the Ernest Borgnine thing mixed in there, too, because that's sounding very familiar also.
We're going to do some research on this. Next week, we're going to do 40 minutes on Future Cop.
Junkyards and Ernest Borgnine.
Well, speaking of cops, another cop show coming out called Backstrom, which is about an offensive, overweight cop.
Huh.
That's the log line, an offensive, overweight cop.
Huh. They should merge it with the Bad Teacher show, and then they could be neighbors.
They could.
It's Jake and the Fat Man, isn't it?
This will be, or they could merge him with Future Cop. He could be the...
an overweight Future Cop.
Uh-huh. Okay. Then there are a couple of romances, some soapish stuff coming out, hitting prime time, including Rain, a soap about Mary Queen of Scots. Sean?
I think this could be good. It sounds fantastic.
This is right up your
alley
of attention.
Yeah, my historical TV show. She led a fascinating life, and there's lots of intrigue, and, you know, it's just like The Tudors, which was very successful for Showtime. And
but this is a perfect example of a network saying, we have to do what cable did.
And if you think about that time period, how many books are there about Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn and Mary Queen of Scots? It's a historical period that's just ripe for... it's an insatiable interest in this time period. I think this could be good. I don't see why this wouldn't work.
Well, Mary was everyone's favorite
Queen of Scots.
Would you watch a soap opera about Mary Queen of Scots?
Is it really a soap opera?
It said...
I mean, it's not going to be on at noon, you know?
Yeah, but it's like an evening soap.
Oh.
So I guess maybe it's like...
Revenge.
I'd probably
try and watch it.
There'll be a lot of swashbuckling and a lot of, you know, bodice tearing and whispered words in dark corners lit by torchlight.
Yeah.
Well, there's also everyone's favorite Roberts, Emma Roberts. Emma Roberts is coming to prime time with a post-apocalyptic romance called Delirium.
Sounds like a Twilight wannabe.
Zombies.
I wonder if there will be zombies.
Like radiation zombie Twilight.
Mutants. They'll call them mutants because they don't want to be like, no, they're not zombies. They're mutants. That's what it'll be.
Yeah.
I don't know about this.
And finally, speaking of zombies, and then we'll wrap this up. Gothica. And guess who Gothica's starring?
Halle Berry.
No. But that was good. I didn't even think about that. Gothica is starring... Dracula.
Oh.
Frankenstein.
Shit.
And Dorian Gray.
Oh, you didn't. Wait, the picture or the dude that just is handsome?
I think it's the dude with the picture.
He just runs around with the picture. Touch my photo.
Yeah, I think he hides the photo, you know?
Like, what power does Dorian Gray have other than he's just handsome?
Yeah,
well,
that's
Dorian
not even
Gray
a thing.
Dorian Gray is an immortal. He cannot be killed.
So,
that's true.
Unless you destroy the picture.
They should have done Jekyll and Hyde at least. Because then he can, like, Hulk out.
That's season two.
Ah.
Yeah.
I'm really... Can we kind of segue from this for a second? Like, I'm getting annoyed with shows like Grimm and Once Upon a Time where they're just mining all of the public domain material for everything. And so they go, people love Dracula. No, they're tired of Dracula. And they're tired of Frankenstein. And all the... What about the Invisible Man? What, was the Invisible Man busy? At least that would be cool, and imagine how much it would save on an actor.
What if he's there, but they don't know yet?
Oh, season two.
Or that's the season finale, where suddenly he's been here this whole time. He's seen everything.
He accidentally coughs at the very end.
I don't know. I think there's a way to maybe do... I don't even know. What is this show?
I don't know. But they're making a pilot, and if it goes to air, we're going to watch it and talk about it on Will Sean Podcast.
Fuck this. Fuck you, TV. This is why you're suffering, because you're out of ideas.
Is that on NBC also?
I'm sure it is. It sounds just terrible enough to be
actually, it's going to be on Univision, and it's going to be a huge hit just to rub it in NBC's face. It'll be in Spanish, and it'll be awesome.
Now transitioning here... I really quickly wanted to touch on this music topic because we don't talk about music enough. And I was delighted to see that – I like that I used the word delighted with the band Nine Inch Nails is going on tour again. And they were a band that, like, when I was in high school, they were a big band. And we were all about, like, yeah, they say fuck. There was a fuck you like an animal. Like, and we're listening to this. Like, and, like, we thought it was great. And they're going on tour for the first time in 4 years. And it got me thinking about, you know, there are these bands like the Rolling Stones that are out there, and Springsteen, he still tours constantly. Do we have bands like today, like right now, these younger bands that we envision that like 40 years from now will be able to say, like, yep, they're still out there, they're in their 70s and they're still out there? And I can't really think of any.
I feel like Coldplay will never die. Not their music. They literally just will never die.
They're Dorian Gray.
They're going to be around for fuck ever.
I think we won't be able to get rid of Nickelback.
They'll always be around.
Eventually Canada will just kill them.
Really?
Yeah.
Enemies of the state.
They'll be hunted down and killed.
By Mounties.
Yeah.
By Mounties. Now, would you mean, are there bands that we will want? Now,
here's the thing. To be touring into your 70s, like, people still want to see the Rolling Stones. I would go see the Rolling Stones.
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think there's anybody, really, these days. The way it works is, like, they did... the cycle of promotion for a band and for a musician.
Well, it's very album driven now.
Slower.
Yeah.
And you expected to have these people performing for a long time. Now, you know, they just fire right through these people.
No, I think, you know. I feel like U2 is going to be touring into their 70s.
Yeah, they might.
I guess they just, they're like...
They're in that in-between generation. Yeah. They're already like in their late 50s.
They're not the Stones, but they're not... Well, I mean, what about the Foo Fighters?
Yeah.
If Dave Grohl wants to, he could go out there and he'll always have that, both the Foo Fighter and the Nirvana cachet that people will want to go see
yeah.
him forever.
I think Green yeah. Day, the kids love Muse, even though I think they're garbage, but whatever, that's a whole different conversation.
But I mean, I guess we can't decide bands like... I don't know, like Mumford and Sons. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, for all we know...
Fun. We'll be doing it until
yeah,
they're
I mean, for but I look at these bands and I find them all so disposable in comparison to somebody like a U2 or even the Foo Fighters or something like that. Well, but am I only saying that because we're living so many years removed from when they started?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you feel like Nine Inch Nails is... I feel like Nine Inch Nails had their moment... And they spoke to a very specific decade.
But I feel like Trent Reznor, and maybe I'm too inside of them, but I feel like he's somebody that I would always get excited about. Trent Reznor, I guess. Mm. I would, but maybe that's...
You know what, listen, if he came out with a bunch of garbage albums, not garbage to band, but if he came out with a bunch of junk albums, I think you'd lose your excitement pretty quickly.
Yeah, but I would still want to go see, like, he's going to play Head Like a Hole. Like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, I don't even know what that is, but...
Head like a hole.
Older than you, I guess, but...
But if Nirvana was still around...
Yeah. Or if the Beastie Boys were still, you know, alive.
Oh, Head Like a Hole.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that
head
song.
Head like
yeah.
a hole. See, black is your soul.
And you're gonna die.
I'd rather die than give you... Bow down before the one you serve.
That's right. You're going to get what you deserve. That was a really... He meant that.
Well, speaking of getting what they deserve, there's this ad on TV. It's for Geico. Geico does all these wacky ads. And there's this one now. Their latest big mascot is this pig. This pig is in all the spots. And there's a new commercial where this woman is on a date with the pig. And... They park the car, and he's, like, looking at the app because the car's broken or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, someone will be here soon. She's like, oh, you didn't want to stay here with me and, like, fool around? Like, basically she wants to fuck the pig in the car is what we're getting at. And it's alluded to in the Geico ad. Well, you know who's not happy about this? Moms. Because moms hate bestiality.
Yeah.
And they are saying that this promotes... bestiality. They're saying 1 million moms, apparently, 1 million of them have come out and said the Geico ad promotes bestiality and you're going to make our kids want to fuck animals. Well, you want to know what 1 million moms? First of all, there aren't a million of you. They're like 10, maybe 12, if we're being generous, and you're just really good at writing letters or emails or whatever. But 1 million moms, nobody... No kid is watching this Geico commercial and being like, when I grow up, I want to park a car with a pig and fuck it. Because you want to know what? Miss Piggy, they sexualized the hell out of her. I saw Charles Grodin want to fuck her in a movie. And guess what? I didn't want to fuck her. I never wanted to fuck Miss Piggy. Because you want to know what? You don't have to worry about this shit. And that's why, 1 million moms, you're the enemy of podcasts. Go fuck yourselves. Why are you... What are you complaining about? Pig commercials. And here's the other thing. And a little more serious note. After I planned on talking about this pig thing, I saw 1 million moms was coming out against this new Amazon Kindle commercial.
Oh.
Because there's an Amazon Kindle commercial where there's...
Fuck a Kindle?
Yeah, where people are fucking Kindles. And if you want to fuck a Kindle, they don't. And this woman and this man are talking in the commercial, and they're on the beach, and the guy buys a Kindle, and he's like, we should have a drink to celebrate. And she's like, my husband's bringing me a drink. And he goes, so is mine. And they turn to the bar, and there's, and he, so he's a gay man on his Kindle, and Amazon, and the 1 million moms are like, no, you're gonna make our kids gay, too. You're gonna, no, 1 million moms, or 1 dozen moms, are all upset about this. So, you know what? Yeah, 1 million moms, just let people fuck who they want to fuck. Maybe they shouldn't fuck pigs. But you know what? Shut the fuck up. you know, with you trying to save us all from our Geico commercials and homosexuality. Go fuck yourselves. 1,000,000 miles.
These were the same bitches that were all up in Ellen's vagina because she was the spokesperson for JCPenney.
Yeah, and they want JCPenney. Like, we're going to show with our dollars that we're not going to spend. You want to know what? I bet you JCPenney's is doing better business than ever.
Actually, they had terrible earnings this quarter on the verge of bankruptcy, but that's neither here nor there.
Edit that part out. JCPenney's is doing better business than ever because people like me are more likely to shop there now because they told the 1,000,000 moms to go fuck themselves. What do you think of all this?
Well, I did watch that commercial actually, and it was really disturbing, and it made me very deeply uncomfortable. And I've decided to join the 1,000,000 moms, but not because I want. I don't think it's going to make people want to fuck a pig. I think it just made people grossed out. It was disturbing to look at.
It's just an upsetting commercial.
I don't want to get Geico insurance either. I mean, I like my insurance already, but you know, like that said, but you know, like
well,
I didn't.
You can never look at Charlotte's Web the same way again.
No.
Oh, Will.
Well, you just what
that's
I said.
Some pig.
You should start a group just offended by bad advertising,
yeah,
then, and not offended by the morality.
Called right? One the, Michael Duggan.
Million, yeah, if the 1,000,000 moms had just turned around and said, I thought it was creepy, and we're against creepy, you know?
Then you're like, I'm on board.
I'd be like, fine. That's it, you know. I mean, of course, we'd have to ignore all the other shit these people have been doing.
Yes.
The 1,000,000 moms, you know, but with their 1,000,000 problems. But, yeah, I don't know why they're not offended by literacy, because clearly none of them are.
Exactly.
You know, like,
the only thing scarier than 1,000,000 moms? 1,000,000 Jewish moms.
Mm.
Terrifying.
Really?
Yeah. All they do is just nag and guilt you until you change your ways.
And you want to know what? They're also, 1,000,000 Jewish moms are very against this Geico ad. Why? You know why?
It's bacon. Uh-huh.
Yeah, not kosher.
Nah, not good.
Yeah, it's not. Well, you want to know what? You've won me over a little bit on this, on the mom's side. But yes,
you can't back down from the enemy. No,
fuck you.
People are horrible.
They're horrible people. But he's right. The ad is creepy. But fuck you. You know what? Fuck you, too, for thinking
the
internet.
I wish the our ad had been, like, maybe just a little more creepy.
You know what? It's that middle ground.
Yeah. Like, if it had gone just a little further, then I could have been like...
But she's like, you know, I have a diaphragm in.
I know. If she had said that, that would have been brilliant. I would have been like, give me some Geico. You know, like, right now.
Come on, Biggie, snout fuck me.
I'll tell you what, and I put this out to all the insurance companies... First insurance company to actually feature the act of bestiality, I will quit my current insurance and take up...
And go to them.
Go to them. Or if they have the gecko fucking the pig for Geico, I'm in. I want a Geico caveman gecko pig orgy.
I don't understand why they need a pig when they...
Why do they need so many mascots? They got the caveman, they got the Geico, the gecko, now they have a pig? Come on. What are you doing, Geico?
They're just trying to find something.
The gecko works fine. What does they need?
They're throwing shit up against the wall and seeing what sticks.
True. You know what? I worked for an advertising company, and that's pretty much what we did.
Yeah.
Was we just came up with mascots for people and then quick, pithy little lines.
Kathy, the pig fucker. It's actually the pig's not the mascot. It's the horny bestiality chick who's the new mascot for Geico.
It's true.
Before we wrap this up, I always like to throw something odd I see in the news. And there's a grill called the Heart Attack Grill.
They have a storytelling show?
They have a storytelling show.
I wish.
I would go there for their storytelling show. But they, basically, they have all these burgers, like the quadruple bypass burger, and you eat it and you die, apparently, because they've had a lot of people dying, just like last week. Someone else had a heart attack and then died.
What is it, like 3 pounds of meat? What do you know what the burger is?
It's something like that, and it's like dripping with cheese and just,
bacon,
you know.
Yeah, it's not good for you.
It's no good for you. So the question here is, who is more responsible? The customer, the stupid customer, or this restaurant that is trying to kill us?
The stupid customer is more responsible.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the restaurant probably should really reevaluate what they're, you know, about. You know, because that's a lot of food for one person.
That's a lot of food.
You know, there's kids starving everywhere. You know, it's
and nobody
awful.
Really would you eat there If someone said, hey, we're going to the Heart Attack
Hell
Grill.
Yeah, I would eat there.
Yeah, I
would
totally
maybe,
go
like,
over
split
there.
Split something. Be like, hey, how about four of us get a Heart Attack Burger and we'll each try it
well,
and that'll be enough.
Well, I gotta tell you, I'm Irish.
Oh.
So you're on your own. You know, I'll eat it until I can't.
Got it. You guys have a very self-hating relationship with food and drink.
You know,
it's just nothing but potatoes and booze.
Yeah.
I'm sure, but I'm assuming... I haven't actually looked up the whole menu, but I'm assuming they have smaller portions
I heard they had like a trough of salad.
Really?
Yeah. Like, you want to be vegetarian?
Here, bitch. Go eat in the trough?
Eat it.
Now,
where is this place? Is it in L.A. or...
I know there's
Vegas.
One in Vegas.
Yeah.
That's the one where the guy died. But multiple people have died. They go there and they eat and they have a heart attack. But you know what? I mean, I asked that question kind of knowing we're all going to say the consumer. Because you want to know what? They put it right there in the title. So if you're stupid enough... This is like your whole thing with the skydiving.
I have a rule. If one of my friends dies from skydiving or bungee jumping, not going to the funeral. Because you know why? Didn't need to jump out of an airplane. Completely avoidable activity. So your own goddamn fault. Not going to the funeral. Fuck
so
you.
So if I went to the Heart Attack Grill and ate a quadruple...
Yeah, fuck you. I'm not going to the funeral.
What if I just had a regular burger, though, there?
Then, okay. But if you get something stupid, you know what I'm doing? When everyone's at your funeral, I'm at your place stealing your DVDs.
Oh.
That's what I'm doing.
That would be a good haul.
Yeah. Good haul. Any of you people, you jump out of a plane, you jump off a bridge, and you die. Pff, you know what?
You're going to be robbed.
Now, if you're sitting at home and a sinkhole opens up under you and you die, yeah, I'll be at your funeral. Because you know what? All your DVDs are gone anyway. They went to a sinkhole.
Yeah. And you got nowhere else to be.
I'm nothing if not pragmatic.
Michael. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks
for breaking down all this stuff with us.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
Before we go, let's do the plugs one more time.
LAStoryWorks.org and the LA Storytelling Festival. Those are our big things. We've got Tattletales every Thursday at Shetty's Public Parlor on Fairfax. And we've got Town Tales at Oh My Ribs Theater once a month. I think it's the second Sunday of every month.
Okay, excellent. And can people... Are you on Twitter? I know you are.
We're all over Twitter.
Where do they find...
Yeah, they can find Mick Duggan on Twitter, and I can give them information directly from there.
Okay, at Mick Duggan, and it's M-I-C.
It's M-I-C-D-U-G-G-A-N.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Sean.
Well, you can follow me at Twitter at TheSeanDavid, also Instagram, and you can see me. I'm on Facebook at TheSeanDavid, and you can buy my book, Triumvirs, TRIUMVIRS, at Amazon for Amazon Kindle, and all the other fun stuff that you guys already know by now. But that's where I live on the internet.
And you can follow me at The Real Will Link. And you can also listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on the PM show with Larry Minetti at crntalk.com. I review movies. You listen this coming week, I'll talk about Oz, the Great and Powerful. It'll be great. I have to explain movies to people who barely know what movies are. They'll never listen to this. And you can also read articles of mine at the website youonecan.com. And I will be reading a story at the Tattletales this Thursday, the 14th, March 14th. So come down and check out Michael's show. Check me out. It'll be a lot of fun, and you'll keep wanting to come back and back, and maybe you'll want to try to see for yourself if you can tell a story. Like
right.
You could, maybe it's something to get involved in, because I'll be honest with you, lately I've been getting involved in this stuff, and it's a lot of fun. So let's see if you've got what it takes.
Fantastic. Everyone has a story.
It's true.
Yes, but not everyone could tell it.
On the show next week, we have Stephanie Flaxman. She is a terrific writer, and she's written a couple of books, one on heartbreak and one on the philosophy of tattoos, and these subjects go hand in hand for me because many a tattooed girl has broken my heart.
Oh.
So this will be, and Stephanie will be the next one to do this.
Oh, I have no doubt about this.
And and then the week after that, we have a very funny comedian, Barbara Gray, and she's also got a podcast, Lady to Lady, and She's very funny. She's coming on, and she's going to make everybody laugh. Except
I believe
from...
she's also a storyteller.
Ah, well, there you go.
There you go.
See, look at that. It all. It's so incestual.
Yeah. Like pigs and women.
And on that note...
That note, Michael, thank you. We're finished.
We're finished.